Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 4 of the Scientology Chat podcast. Hopefully, everybody is having a nice, what is today, Thursday? Yes, I hope you're having a nice Thursday. I am here with the actual host of the
Thank you. We're giving our new NPR direction a go from the sound of things.
NPR is relaxing,
Yeah.
even though they talk about dumb stuff a lot.
This episode is going to be a little different than originally planned. We're going to have to change the breakdown of the Breaking Points interview to be next Thursday for two different reasons. The first one being, there just wasn't enough time to cut everything down the way that I wanted
I was
to.
going to say, what about Sunday?
Well, Sunday, I don't know if we're gonna have enough time if we.
Oh, right, Vegas.
Yeah. So instead, today's gonna be a different topic. We're gonna talk about why I'm not in the Church of the IAS in the Church of Scientology anymore. I had mentioned previously that I had a grievance against one particular person in the church, and that was the reason I'm not in it anymore. And I kind of wanted to talk about that to explain the story a bit better.
Well, please refrain from using any specific name because we already got a email about
Well, yeah, we'll just leave
that.
that at that. Pretty much the long story short of what happened and why I don't have a grudge against the church itself, just one person, and I'll explain why. When I was taking what's called the Hubbard Professional Auditors course, during that course, as you're studying to get a certificate to be an actual certified professional auditor and all of that, I was getting everything set up. As you reach the end of that course, you don't finish the course and then become an auditor right away. You finish the course and you become a provisional auditor, and then you have to do, I think, 6 months, I believe. I could find it in the booklet, but you have to do a certain amount of time auditing, and then you turn that in, and then you become a permanent auditor. I was working on that and I was getting everything set up to do this. Because once you become an auditor, you can audit outside of the church. And so I was setting that up, setting up a page on Facebook, getting everything ready to be able to start doing that once I completed the book. I set it up, I was starting to interact with people, I was trying to set up. So when I completed the course as it was coming to its end so that I could start doing the provisional auditing, I started to try and set up appointments and times with people so that I would be able to audit them to complete the provisional part of the requirement of the course. So at the same time that I was doing that, I was also working on a project that I was doing with the book self-analysis and doing some work with that with the jail. Our local jail to try and see if that program would be able to help people in the way that it had helped me. And it was going extremely well.
I already feel like this is a lot more specific than
Well,
I was thinking. Never
I mean,
mind.
they already clearly know who I am, so I'm just not going to talk about who they are by
We'll
name.
probably talk about that later, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not the host.
While I was working on that project, I was getting everything set up. I was doing it in communication with people at the org so that they knew what I was doing, what I was trying to accomplish. And the church was providing me with materials. I was bringing the church, like we talked about before with the Criminon, the church already has a presence in a lot of jails and prisons, but the Way to Happiness doesn't really have anything to do with Dianetics or Scientology. It's more of a philosophy and less of the religious aspect. While I was working on that, there was a particular person on the church who seemed to take quite an interest in this project and seemed to be throwing up roadblocks solely at every opportunity.
Well, I was going to say interest in a good or bad way, but
at the beginning, I thought that it was good, but as time went on, I noticed that everything I was doing seemed to be being blocked by this person in some way, even though other people at the org who I had spoken to in positions of authority in different divisions thought that what I was doing was an excellent idea. I was invited to join, to try to join the OT committee. I was getting great feedback and great support to the point of that. You don't actually need to be an OT to be on the committee, but we'll just leave that there. So, as things progressed, I finally get a message from this person, and they tell me that the project that I'm working on is just a no-go. It's been completely rejected, and that's the end of the story. And I was wondering if what I was trying to do had been correctly passed up through the church, or if this person who seemed to be blocking me at every avenue had perhaps misled people in the church higher-ups about what I was doing so that this result would come about. This person had herself already completed quite an impressive project. And so a part of me has wondered if that was a bit of the reason behind it, not wanting to be overshadowed or what. Because it didn't make sense to me at any point through any of this process why what happened was happening. So at a certain point, because of this person and our conversation that we've had with each other, when I lived in North Idaho and I was doing Book One, Dianetics, by myself, I had made it abundantly clear to the Church of Scientology and to iHelp that I was auditing other people. The book tells you to do that.
Wait, what? What is iHelp?
iHelp is the group of auditors who don't have to be Scientologists, but they help auditors stay connected and find people, and it's like a directory. Oh, it's okay. Almost like the American Psychiatric Association, but for the Dianetics version of that. And so I had been in contact with them multiple times. I had a contact at the Sea Org who I was in communication with for many years. I mean, I talked to her for probably 7 years over the phone and through texts off and on when I had questions or just to talk about how we were doing. So I was very clear about that. But then somewhere along the way, the people at the church were suddenly under the impression that I was charging people to be audited. And that is explicitly against the rules unless you are a certified auditor. I mean, independent Scientologists can do it and people outside of the church can. But if you're in the church and you want to do it, you have to be a certified auditor. And so this leads to me being investigated by the OSA, which is why I know that they exist.
I thought you were going to say the OSS.
Well, that's what you said in the last episode.
Wait, the last one or the one before the last one?
The last one where we talked about the OSA.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
And so during this process, they were very fond. The person who I spoke with was very nice. He could tell that I was upset about what was going on, so he gave me an assist. We'll talk about assists at a later point, but it was definitely helpful. We went through the process and of me being asked questions, and I was explaining my answers and all of this. I made it abundantly clear that what was being accused of me of trying to abuse or squirrel church tech by charging people for auditing made no goddamn sense, because if I was trying to do that, Why would I have paid $300 to take the fucking professional auditor's course in the first place if I didn't want to do it and do it right?
What, did we explain what a squirrel is?
I think, I want to say yes, but the gist of it is anybody who practices Scientology outside of the Church of Scientology is called a squirrel, and using the church tech outside of the church is called squirreling. So,
That sounds like a sex term, almost.
It's because it's nuts.
Ah.
So, that's kind of what was going on. At the same time, while I was setting everything up with the Facebook page, this was something that was repeatedly brought up during this interview process, and they kept pointing to the page as evidence of what I was doing, as like to show, see, right here, you were soliciting people to pay you for auditing. And I showed them the messages and the posts and everything where I was specifically saying I would be auditing people for free for experience before getting my certificate. And not only that, but I had also continued to be in communication with iHelp. I had paid them the fee to join iHelp as a professional, and iHelp gave me my money back and told me to do it again once I got the certificate. And they were in communication with me the whole time. I showed them all the messages I had exchanged with them, how I had told them what I was doing, what I was working on, what I was setting up, and why. I defended myself by talking just like I did before, saying I was doing this so that I could go from a provisional auditor to a permanent one. And so we discussed everything. The person that I spoke with, like I said, was very nice, understanding. He was actually the person who told me about, you know, that sometimes you can get caught between you know that you don't know and you don't know that you don't know, certain rules and things like that. But I felt like I had made it abundantly clear in our conversation that everything I did in constant communication with people at the church, made it clear what I was doing, why I was doing it, and that it all made perfect, obvious sense. And that it is about as illogical as it could be to think that I was charging people for auditing to squirrel the tech, even though I had paid to take the course and paid to join iHelp so that I could do it the way that the church wants me to. That makes no goddamn sense to think that I was deliberately breaking rules or even breaking the rules at all when I wasn't. So, one thing leads to another. We go through this whole process, and I mean, at the end of the day, like we said, I just wound up parting ways with the church. It was at some point. I hope that things can mend themselves. If this person goes to a different org, for example, that would be great. I would really like to, you know, mend that gap. I'm still, you know, I still communicate with people in different aspects of the church to get materials or discuss courses and things like that. So, that's pretty much the gist of what happened.
Are there, like, updates, like, with Teslas and stuff?
Updates to, with what?
Updates to the ideology. You know, like how Christians accept gay people now?
Oh, yeah.
Things like that.
Well, I mean, the stuff that everything in Scientology being based on Dianetics, and Dianetics being being treated as a science.
Science! That,
it says in Handbook for Preclears that in any Scientology material that you read, if one book differs from another book in a fact, then you should take the later book as the correct one because it's based on more data.
So it's like any science book?
I mean, as you work more through, yeah, well, as you work more through something, I mean, being gay is a perfect example because
Glad I brought it up.
Well, Dianetics talks about being gay as an aberration. And Elrond, and it says that again in Handbook for Preclears, but then Elrond Hubbard stops talking about it entirely, which kind of makes sense to me. I mean, he was a white man in the 1940s and 50s.
It was the government.
I mean, homosexuality was considered a mental illness in general at that period. And as he learned more, met more people, I mean, there were many Scientologists. I think the Scientologists the Manson family killed were, one of them was gay. I'm pretty sure. So,
really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. There are some famous stories that people very close to L. Ron Hubbard were gay. I don't know the validity of that, but, you know, it is what it is. But there's a piece of policy in, I think, 1958, somewhere around the late 50s, early 60s, where L. Ron Hubbard wrote a policy letter to all Scientologists dictating new rules relating to Scientologists and the second dynamic. And the second dynamic is the sex dynamic. And the policy letter states in no uncertain terms that if any Scientologist interferes with the study, growth, or life of another Scientologist based off their second dynamic, then the person whose study has been interrupted Okay, well, we'll just simplify this into non-Scientologist terms. Basically, what he said was, if you go around judging people and you cause them to not want to continue study or to leave the Church of Scientology because they're gay, lesbian, whatever, you, the offender, are not allowed to receive any more courses until you pay for the courses of the person that you've offended. And so... the church takes that very seriously. If you level that against somebody, everything stops until the ethics committee is done. And which is a pretty stark change from Dianetics. And so I think that that makes sense because L. Ron Hubbard also thought that there was a lot of correlation between Ingrams and homosexuality. And not so much that it was a bad thing, but because he believed in multiple lives, he thought that somewhere through one of your lives, and this also goes to the trans community, he thought that in a previous cycle, you may have been a woman and your Thetan still connects to the woman in your past, and that's why you feel like you're in the wrong body. Or in one of your past lives, regardless of your own gender, the love of your life was a man. So no matter what body your Thetan is attached to, it's still looking for the love that it had in a previous life.
Well, I was going to say, isn't everybody born female? That's why, like, men have nipples, right?
I even know.
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
That...
Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
That would make sense. I mean... Somewhere along the way, the chromosomes must have to make a choice, so you have to start as one or the other, I would imagine.
Well, I was going to say, I have more confidence in that than I do, like, looking at the sun every day. So your eyeballs build tolerance to the light. I believe that's how science works.
Yeah.
Don't look at the sun.
And I mean, that's another question because that comes to Scientology and a lot of people assume that that's the reason that I broke off ties with the church. It certainly wasn't. Actually, a person in my org who I was close to, we had talked about setting up a booth at Pride and talking about kind of what I had just talked about. Not trying to convert people or get people even into the org. We had discussed at lengths just kind of going and showing support because the Church of Scientology is part of the interfaith community and the interfaith community puts on a lot of events for the LGBT community.
What is interfaith?
It's a bunch of different religions and churches coming together to put on events together.
Okay, that sounds nice.
So we had put everything, we had kind of come up with a plan. We had looked at pricing. We were kind of trying to get a feel for everything to figure everything out. And then unfortunately, the OT committee shut that idea down. And I don't know to what extent that happened, but the answer that I got was that they were afraid that it might not be construed as a testament of support to the community, but they would be said that it would be seen as the Church of Scientology of Utah making a political statement in Utah specifically. And doesn't matter if the church does something good or bad, publicity for the Church of Scientology is usually still a bad thing.
Also, watch out for the Mormons.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. So I think that was more where they were coming from, was that all publicity is bad publicity, unfortunately, when it comes to the church, because of the lack of knowledge that people have about it, that the whole point that this even exists in the first place. The people who have the platform to talk about Scientology lie about it, either deliberately or lying without, because they don't want to know the truth or haven't bothered to try and find it. It's one of those things, because that's the only explanation for all of the baloney that we've covered in just 3 episodes. And so.
Well, I was gonna say it's that would be just like the people that like they convince themselves like no, this cannot be true.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that I can watch so many interviews by these former Scientologists, and they can say within one paragraph of answering a question, Scientologists believe that they are out there doing good for people by trying to get them help, getting them into a quote-unquote self-help program, and trying to make them into a better person. And then within 10 seconds, the interviewer will say, "What would you like to see as the future of Scientology?" And they say, "Shut it down." So if you can't differentiate between the bad actions of some higher-ups and the good work that are done by people who are on the ground that you have acknowledged are actually trying to do good things for good people, that says a lot about your mentality going into it to me.
Well, and also, if you live in the United States, I believe there are some states where you cannot give homeless people food or water, or you can get fined for that.
Yeah, like making it public policy to not let them be able to sleep under an otherwise unoccupied overpass. So, bit of a different tone to this episode than last time, more of a lamenting than a lambasting. So, yeah, what a depressing sentiment.
A little bit.
There was, I mean, since we're on the topic and we can kind of just keep going, since this episode doesn't have a lot of structure to it compared to the usual ones, I really wanted to get that first story out of the way just to clear up that I didn't leave because I'm gay or I didn't leave because someone was mean to me or anything like that. I mean, they weren't mean to me. They were following the rules. It's just a matter of fact that they trusted the person who they had known longer than me over what I was saying at the end of the day. What I told you about the evidence that I provided, I gave it all to them and it was disregarded. So, yeah, like I said, at least as of so far, I have not been made a persona non grata from the Church of Scientology, but we'll see what happens as this show continues. One of the topics kind of going along that line of it's something that we'll talk about when we do cover that interview. It's one of the things that I'm concerned about with trying to do that is I don't know how much of what somebody says I can share so that you can hear it and then I can talk about it without getting in trouble for it. So I'm trying to figure that out and walk that thin line so I don't get in trouble from Spotify, Amazon, et cetera, for using material that I don't own, since I had to sign a freaking 10-page document swearing I wouldn't do that before creating the podcast in the first place.
Oh, wow.
So, we'll see about where that goes with that. But if we have to, I'll just write it down and read you the quotes and put a link to the video in the description. But the idea that Scientologists don't promote or don't have support for familial connections and bonds and things like that is just a straight-up lie. That was something that I had heard be said, to say that you are taught that you're just a Thetan in a temporary body, and your children are just Thetans in a temporary body, and so you're not really connected to them in any sort of meaningful way, and so that it's conditioning them to accept, disconnection or something down the line, which is a lie. I mean, everything that we do in Dianetics is recorded and affects us emotionally. Positive emotions, wins, familial connections. The second dynamic of four in Dianetics is the family dynamic. I mean, and it's kept over in Scientology as the second dynamic of the eight. And all of the dynamics, including your family dynamic, whether you have children or are close to any member of your family, or if it's the family you create for yourself in your life by the people you choose to be around, that is what Scientology says is one of the four in Dianetics and eight in Scientology dynamics that push us towards survival and eventually to thrive in life.
Well, I was going to say, what you were just saying earlier was making me think about, like, when you get, like, a little kitten or a little baby puppy.
Yeah.
And then a couple days into it, you're thinking, like, oh, my God, how am I going to cope with this when this thing dies? Because I know it's not going to live as long as I am.
Yeah. Another depressing thought.
Well, I mean, it can be funny.
Well, at least as long as it's not actually happening.
Well, right.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say, is that that is just a load of baloney. The Church of Scientology does not deliberately try to separate you or disconnect you or disjoint you from your family for no reason, or to make you more malleable to be controlled.
Like the state.
Right. that's just simply not true. And there's something else related to that that I wanted to talk about. Almost every single former Scientologist who talks about Scientology on television or on a platform like YouTube was born into the church and raised in it. And so a lot of what they talk about, if you think about where they're coming from, there's probably, 10... Even if that, 10 major well-known former Scientologists, and all of them were born and raised in the church, and almost all of them were born to Sea Org members or former Sea Org members. And so their experience of Scientology, to me, is very similar to, if I think about it and think that they genuinely believe that everything that they're saying is true, which most of the time I don't, but to give them the benefit of the doubt in this scenario, if I was going to say that I believe that everything that they were saying they actually believe was true, I think that they believe that because they grew up with the Scientology equivalent of the crazy Christian parents who wouldn't let their kids watch Harry Potter.
Do Scientologists let an old man dunk a baby into water and do some, like, weird, like, cross shit?
No, there's definitely no baptism in Scientology.
Baptism, right, yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. The only way that I can put what they say and think that they believe what they're saying is true is to consider that these 10-ish well-known Scientologists all grew up under and with former or current Sea Org members. And the Sea Org members of the church are the most hardcore believers. That's not to say that all Scientologists don't believe in the religion, but Scientology has the first page says that something in Scientology is only true if it's true for you. I've talked about this before, where that's why you're not allowed to interpret materials for someone. You're not supposed to try and convince them that something is true. You're supposed to give them a technique, an auditing technique, self-analysis, whatever. Let them read it, let them do it, and see if it works for themselves or see if it doesn't.
Is not to bring this up, but is that like the whole LGBTQ, whatever the fuck, my truth or all that? Or am I thinking of Me Too stuff?
I'm honestly not sure about that, but it would be...
Never mind. Scratch that.
I mean, it's a bit different because I understand the idea that you mean by that, but it would be slightly different in that Scientology gives you, if you don't believe something in Scientology, whether it's the Wall of Fire or whether it's reincarnation or whatever, if you read the books and you don't agree with something, you don't have to. It's not a requirement. Scientology doesn't have a doctrine the same way that other religions do, like the Catholic Church, where everything you are supposed to believe as a Catholic is in the catechism. So in Scientology, let's use the Wall of Fire as an example. If a Scientologist doesn't believe in the Wall of Fire, they are still a Scientologist, just like if you ask a group of Catholics, do you believe that the Eucharist literally turns into the body and blood of Jesus Christ? It's called transubstantiation. It's a fundamental belief in Catholicism and Anglicanism.
Are you talking about the wine and the crackers?
Yeah, so in Protestantism, it represents the body and the blood, but in the Catholic Church, this is true, and it says it in the Catechism, the bread and the wine aren't just symbolism, they literally turn into the actual body and blood of Jesus Christ.
I was going to say, there's a cracker and wine company that are making a killing.
I mean, so... That is a fundamental belief in Catholicism, as the Eucharist is the most important part of the church. It's the most important sacrament, and it's one of the things taken away from you if you're excommunicated or if you're not baptized yet, whether you haven't been confirmed and taken First Communion or haven't graduated from the RCIA program. So, if you asked Catholics, do you believe that when you get up to the front of the line to take communion, you are putting an actual piece of skin and drinking blood in your mouth? They would say overwhelmingly no. Does that mean that they're not Catholics? No. They are still Catholics, even though they don't believe one of the fundamental teachings of the church. So... that's similar to Scientology, and I would say all religions in general, but whereas in Catholicism, I would say you're still a Catholic, even if you don't believe in transubstantiation, but the Catholic Church might not agree with that statement. Other Catholics might say, I'm still a Catholic, even if I don't believe in this, but again, the Catholic Church would probably disagree with you on that. Whereas in Scientology, if you don't believe something, you can say, I don't believe this, but I'm still a Scientologist. And the church would say, fair enough, good on you. They wouldn't say, well, you need to try again to understand it better. If it was a technique to try and test something and you didn't understand it, they would help you understand it to be able to do it. But if you did it and it did and you felt like it did not work for you, it wasn't true for you, and you said, I want to move on to something else. This just isn't something that I believe in, but I'm still a Scientologist. they would just say, all right, fair enough. Let's go. Whatever you want to do, take on next. That would be the difference in Scientology's doctrines versus other major religions.
I was going to say, I was baptized Catholic, I believe. Although I am an atheist, and I have been for a long time now.
Yeah.
So I remember lambasting. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
My brother, my older brother, when I was a child, and like ridiculing him for like for not believing in God. I was just like, how in the hell can you not believe God exists? And then a couple years later, I was like, no, you know what? He knew some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing that I like about Scientology as a religion compared to others. Scientology doesn't try to explain things that it can't. There is no creation myth in Scientology. Many people think that the Wall of Fire is the creation myth of Scientology, but it's not. L. Ron Hubbard actually said that Scientology does not and never will, until science allows us, try to understand why we are all here. Its purpose isn't to try and answer that question. Its purpose is to answer the question of how can we best live now that we are here. And I think that that should be the fundamental goal of all religion. So,
I mean, besides living in peace and all that.
Well, and that was enough, because L. Ron Hubbard, this is why a lot of, I mean, if you ask Scientologists, they'll talk about this too. He talks about the atom bomb a lot, like a lot, a lot. And as a product of his generation in the 50s and late 40s, 50s, 60s, with the Cold War and the nuclear threat and everything growing around the world, it makes sense, and the awe that would have been inspired by not just him, but the power we had to destroy ourselves. And so that's what he uses as a metaphor. And I can't even stress to you on this, just to, unless you read the books or and listen to him yourself, a lot. A lot. Scientology, its entire purpose is to try and build peace through understanding. That's the ARC triangle. The only way that you can effectively communicate between two people is if you have an affinity for each other, which doesn't just mean how much you like each other, a reality that you both agree on, and communication between the two. You can't have any one of those three things without having the other two, otherwise it will fall apart. And so that's one of the reasons, like we talked about before, of what I think drove the church to be a lot more militant over the years with the pharmaceutical companies. A lot of the religious views the foundational bit of Scientology's theology as a religion has to do with that. Trying to build understanding for peace and especially to try and prevent nuclear war, but war in general, destruction of each other. L. Ron Hubbard thought that the biggest aberration of mankind was how we have become to accept something as normal when it is inherently not normal. And the example that he uses for that is in his era and still today, he's thought that it was a disgusting aberration of American society and global society, that it was considered to be normal, that at any point, should circumstances arise, it was perfectly normal that with the push of a button, we could launch a missile and kill millions and millions of Russians. He thought that that was an aberration to the core of mankind, that a lack of understanding, a lack of communication, and a lack of affinity for each other. And so that was one of the things that he thought auditing and Scientology would be able to help as it grew.
Well, along with that, I wouldn't say mankind necessarily has that desire, but certainly people with certain ideologies definitely do.
And I get, and that's just one small example, but other normal, other things you're forced to accept as normal that shouldn't be normal, even down to if you live in a dangerous country and you're forced to accept that we it is normal to be afraid to leave your house and walk to school, or like in Ireland during the Troubles, to be forced to accept that it's normal that you may be blown to smithereens just for walking down the wrong street at some time.
I was going
to
say, is that the, during, probably not the potato famine, but maybe during, like, IRA stuff?
That's the IRA stuff, yes. So it's those kinds of things, things that we're forced to accept as normal, that we, that are inherently not normal. And so that's the why I would say Scientology is probably one of the only religions of peace, because at its very core, it is abhorrent to war. And so I think that that's going to pretty much bring us to the end of this episode. Like I said, this episode was a lot less structured than it normally otherwise would have been. We'll be back to a more normal structured episode on Sunday when we cover the topic of Scientology and media with the two video games and the film that we'll talk about. But if you have any other questions or anything about this episode or the previous episodes,
questions, comments, concerns,
you can send those to ScientologyChat, all one word, at gmail.com. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
You know, world peace, read books, question everything, especially authority. Yeah, I think that's it.
All right, perfect. Well, have a good rest of your night, and thank you for listening.
Good night, everybody!